ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife travel.
Well, summer holiday is not too far away. There's many Australians are ardent international travellers. That means long flights, especially to Europe and the Americas. Then there's that Qantas project, isn't it, which they're calling Project Sunrise, their highly anticipated non-stop service from Sydney to London and New York. It was due to have begun about now, but due to a range of issues, will now commence probably in early 2027. Now, these flights will see passengers looking at record times in the air without a break, around 20 to 22 hours. But the new frontier of air travel comes with some added health risks and remind us that flying is not risk-free. Dr. Deb Mills is Medical Director of Brisbane's Dr. Deb the Travel Doctor, and she's been working in travel medicine for more than 35 years, and she joins us this evening. Deb, good evening to you. Welcome to Nightlife.
Good evening, Phil. Good evening, listeners. Thank you for having me.
Is 20 hours in the air safe? I suppose this is one of the things that they are considering, isn't it?
Well, Qantas have done a lot of work on this to make sure that it is. But, I mean, I think any air travel has an increased risk, and it depends on the individual as well. Some people are at higher risk of having a DVT or a deep vein thrombosis than others. And so it really has to be individualised. You have to look at the person and where they're going. In a way, the flights are safer because you're not so long stuffing around traveling, and yeah, you get to your destination, get on the ground, and risks are less there. But just being in the air, getting dehydrated and so on, can increase your risk of having problems.
Yeah. Tell us about the problem. I mean, I remember when deep vein thrombosis came out, as it were, when we were sort of first, and it was in the early 2000s, wasn't it? Late 90s.
Yes, yeah, so. This poor lady.
Then you don't seem to hear so much about it anymore. Is that because it's still happening and we got sick of talking about it, or what happened?
I think that's what happened, yes, because DVT was known for years. Mm. And there was a poor lady who came back from the Olympics. She was young, she was on the pill, yeah, and she got off her very long flight between Sydney and London and tragically dropped dead in the baggage collection area at Heathrow Airport from a DVT, because what happens is as you sit on the plane for long periods of time, especially if you don't move very much, the blood in your calf pools and clots, and then it comes loose and spreads up and goes through the heart and lodges in the lungs, and it can't get any further, and people just die. Terrible.
Why does it happen? What's peculiar about aeroplanes, though? Because, I mean, people sit down for long periods of time at work and, you know, activities. What is it about planes?
Well, look, it's not about planes. They've actually first described DVTs in the air raid shelters during the war, when people sat in air raid shelters for long periods of time.
Right.
You can have a clot after a long bus trip, after a long car trip. It became more famous, I guess, from planes, but you can get it at any time. If people are lying in bed for long periods of time after surgery, they would get these clots.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's not rest in bed after surgery, it's get up and move around. They want everybody moving, because moving your calf muscle pushes the blood out of the bottom of your feet and back into circulation, so it doesn't sit there long enough to clot. And that's why all the guidelines say you need to, you know, do the exercises, get up and walk around, drink lots of water and so on, to decrease your risk of having one of these episodes.
Quite hard to get up and walk around if you're stuck in economy, particularly in the window seat. I mean,
absolutely. And there are more clots. There's 15% less clots if you're sitting on the aisle, because people do get up and walk around.
Exactly. You can't get out if you're stuck on the window.
So, no, that's right. And they used to say it was economy class syndrome, but it's not. You can get it in business class just as much. It's about sitting. It's also about age. As you get over the age of 50, your risk of having a clot increases, just because things don't work as well. If you're on certain chemicals like the pill, it increases your risk.
Hmm.
If you've had recent surgery, if you've got genetic abnormalities of your clotting system, all these things can increase your risk of having a DVT.
Yeah, all right. So the ways around it are your exercises, the stepping up and down, waggling your feet in circles, all of that sort of thing. I mean, does that work or not?
It does help, because you want to move those calves. People used to take sleeping pills on aeroplanes, and they would lie there for 4 or 5 hours completely immobile with the pressure of the back of the seat against their thigh, which was stopping the blood getting back to the heart and really increasing their risk of having DVT. And so now patients will come in and say, oh, can I have some sleeping pills? It's so boring on the plane. I say, look, you really can't, because it increases your risk of having this DVT.
Hey, what do you reckon is the best way of dealing with jet lag?
Well, the evidence is that you basically try and behave in the new time zone like the locals.
Right.
So you eat at the right times, you sleep at the right times, you have your meals at the right times, and all these give your body a consistent message that this is the new time zone. But there's just no real way of doing it. Qantas have done some research on these long flights to see if shining bright lights at particular times will make people adjust to the time zones more quickly. And when you're young, you just adjust better than when you're older. When you go in certain directions, like west is best. So coming back from England, people get a lot worse jet lag than when they're going to
I've noticed that. Why is that?
Because if you were in a dark room where there was no light, your normal circadian rhythm is about 25 hours, not 24. And that's why it's much easier for us all to stay up an extra hour later than to go to bed an hour earlier. And when you're flying west, you just stay up a little bit longer and the body copes well. But when you've got to go to bed earlier, particularly if you're going to somewhere like America, your night is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's impossible to sleep at 2 o'clock in the afternoon because you're just not used to it. So you have to stay up all the way through to the next 2 o'clock in the afternoon to get to the night, and people just find that really difficult. So there are medications that people can carry with them that do help some people. There's a tablet called melatonin, which is the hormone of darkness. It's what increases normally at night that makes you feel tired and want to go to sleep. This hormone of darkness switches everything to sleep mode. And if you take that externally, so you take a dose of melatonin at 10 o'clock when it's night where you're going, not when you're leaving, that will help your body get another message that says, this is night time, you need to go to sleep. And see, the problem is when melatonin is not there, you want to keep eating and weeing and getting up and moving around. So the melatonin helps switch off the need to go to the bathroom, the need to get up and eat. And when people get to England, they usually get there at 6 o'clock in the morning. And if they can, it's good to walk around in the sunshine, get lots of bright light into the optic nerve, because that switches off your melatonin production. To eat.
So you would say if you arrive at 6 in the morning, which is a common time of arrival, you should stay up all day.
Well, if you're going to have a nap, make sure it's a half-hour nap and not 4 or 5 hours. People will want to sleep for a long time, but if you can have a few, you know, an hour nap at the most and then walk around in the sunshine, that helps reset your body clock. And now they're looking at different types of diets that help adjust to your jet lag and different lights that adjust to your jet lag.
So what about coming back the other way? You know, when you say it's bad coming back from England, for example. What's the best thing to do there?
Same sort of thing is book your trip so you don't have to go back to work the day after you arrive home, because it will take you a couple of days. It's about a day for every 3 or 4 hours. So it can take 4 or 5 days to recover from a flight from England to Australia. And just have that time that you can allow where you're not going to be at your peak. There are evidence that people have more car crashes when they're jet lagged, that, you know, people make bad decisions when they're jet lagged. So accept that we are human and that we'll take a few days to recover. Try and eat your meals at the normal times, get exercise in the normal times, get lots of sunlight, especially in the morning, and that will help you adjust to the new time zone more quickly.
We're talking about the problems of long-haul flights and traveling, etc. You write a little bit about pressure on aeroplanes. It's always been puzzling to me as to why aeroplanes haven't sorted this out. Why don't they just keep a constant pressure?
Well, there is a constant pressure, but it's at about 8,000 feet, and it's not. You can't pressurize an aircraft to sea level because it's just too expensive. The cost of doing that is just out of control. And so what happens is as you fly at, say, 34,000, your body is feeling like it's 8,000, so that's not too bad. And for some people, that is enough to cause breathing problems because they're sort of on the edge at sea level, but you get the air a bit thinner and they can't quite cope. So people with heart disease, with lung disease, kidney disease, can do very poorly on planes, and they say it's best to wait a month or so after you've had any major surgery. It also does funny things to your teeth. If you've had teeth surgery and you've got an air pocket in one of your tooth, at one of your teeth, as the plane goes up, the air gets thinner. And then when your plane goes down again, the air gets kind of fatter. And so it can cause teeth pain, it can cause ear pain. Any pieces of your body that's exposed to this increasing pressure will hurt. And so fizzy drinks are not a good idea when you're on planes, because as the plane is flying at 8,000 meters, the air is quite small. But when the plane descends, that pressure of those bubbles increases because the bubbles expand as the plane descends and you get more pain.
Not that you do get too much to eat on planes anymore. You used to, but not anymore. In fact, it's often hard to get anything. But what do you reckon, what do you think about eating and drinking on long flights anyway?
Well, look, your body needs less food when you travel. It's very important to keep your fluids up. I would certainly, you know, a glass of wine is fine, but you don't want to have three or four or five or six, because that also increases your risk of having a clot. It also means that if there was a problem, you're not going to respond as well. And one of the problems with all aircraft is that nowadays there is more turbulence, and the plane can just suddenly, with no warning, hit clear air turbulence and drop. And if you don't have your seatbelt on, you basically hit the top of the plane, and there have been some deaths and some people who've been paralyzed by unexpected drops of the aircraft. And so it's very important to keep your seatbelt tightly fastened, especially if you're sleeping, but to minimize the amount of time. It's quite a dilemma, because you don't want to get up and walk around the plane in case there's some clear air turbulence, but you need to get up and walk around, because otherwise you get a DVT.
I was going to say, I thought we were just saying you had to get up and move around. So
I know. So it's a kind of fine line. But I think the main thing is, if you're sitting in your seat, make sure your seatbelt is well and truly fastened. And if you're traveling with children, make sure their seatbelt is fastened too, because you don't want to run the risk, if there was any turbulence, that the plane will drop. And the odds of you being out of your seat when it drops are probably not that great compared to the whole plane. But if you can keep your seatbelt fastened as much as possible, that certainly is recommended.
Okie doke. All right, Deb, good advice. Thank you, and appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.